this week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
Milei, somehow, it's a creation of the Zionist media that controls almost every TV station in Argentina.
We look at the ties between Argentinian President Javier Milei and the Zionist project.
Every patient is a target, every hospital is a target, and every doctor and nurse is a target.
As the genocidal U.S.-Israeli war on Palestinians continues, a Palestinian-American psychiatrist speaks up for injured and murdered healthcare workers in Gaza.
And we were a little different than the voice of Martin Luther King and them. We didn't want to sit on toilets next to white folks. We wanted our own toilets. We were that group.
And we hear from one of the political forefathers of rap, the legendary Omdi, the leader and last one standing of the Watts Prophets. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Polina Vasilyev. Javier Milei was elected president of Argentina in 2023. A self-proclaimed anarcho-capitalist libertarian, Milei quickly hit the working class with extreme austerity. With inflation spiraling out of control, more and more Argentinian families are falling into extreme poverty. Milei is also an avowed Zionist. I spoke to Argentinian journalist and documentary filmmaker Sebastián Salgado.
How do we explain the rise of Javier Milei to power? And what interests does he serve?
Milei, he built himself as someone that came from out of politics. And for most of the Argentinian people, that was a good reason enough because of their anger against the government, the one that was at the moment he became elected and the one before. A lot of people in Argentina are angry with the politics, the traditional political parties, because they don't feel like part of the projects that they have for the country. So Milei came into politics saying that he was going against that kind of people and that he will fight against the politicians that are part of the system. So many people believe that, but in the other hand, we have to understand that he is a project very near to what we know here as the right wing somehow. But at the same time, he had no political party. He has no bands like President Zelensky in Ukraine was someone built with the media. He was an actor and he had some kind of a film that he became the president of Ukraine because in that play he was a university teacher. Okay, Milei is more or less the same because he was related with all the media related with Israel in Argentina. And little by little, he was building this person that represents the interest of the common people in Argentina against the politicians. And one of the things that he made believe the people that if they wanted, they could have their own salaries in American dollars, for example. So if you have some kind of an income in, let's say, 2,000 Argentinian pesos, now you will have the same income, but in American dollar, which is stupid because of the inflation we have in this country. But many people believe that, and that other part of the anger against the traditional political parties was at least one of the reasons of why he became the president of this country now.
Now, some people listening to us may not know, but the father of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, in 1896, in his famous book, The Jewish State, had a chapter dedicated to the following question, Palestine or Argentina? Can you take it from there?
Yes, sure. In that moment, you know, the Jewish state was not a reality. It was just a political idea. They were not so sure if the religious excuse, let's say, to build the state of Israel was good enough. And they knew also that it was a very large country with small population in South America, which is Argentina, that they decide that could be one of the choices. So we are not sure if they decide only for one of the choices. Of course, we can see what is going on in Palestine since the last at least 76 years. But at the same time, we have a very big influence for the Zionist lobby in this country in all the political parties, not only with Milei.
I've heard you assert that, in your opinion, Javier Milei is also a product of Israel, a product of Zionism.
Milei, somehow, it's a creation of the Zionist media that controls almost every TV station in Argentina. So he showed somehow very close to the Zionist organizations here in Argentina, which are very related with the right wing of some of the political parties. And he is showing every time he can this kind of Islamophobic campaign, trying to say that Muslim people is related to terrorism, like that narrative related to Israel. He wants to bring it even here to Argentina. Because as you know, we have two terrorist attacks here in the 90s, in 1992, the Israel embassy, and in 1994, a building related to the Jewish community. So after those two terrorist attacks, no one can say anything against the Jewish community, because if you say so, it's like if they put you in the way that you support those terrorist attacks. So Milei, it's some kind of a part of that narrative. And this year, in July 18, it became the 30th anniversary of those terrorist attacks, and he showed himself very close to those Zionist organizations.
Tell me about the Israeli company Mekorot, who is now, even now, in the news for denying Palestinians water, and apparently they are now in Argentina. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Mekorot, it's a military company that steals the water of the Palestinian people. If they have to, they can change the course of a river. They deny the right of Palestinians of make even, you know, a hole to try to find water. They don't even let them to try to catch the water from rain. So many people in Palestine, especially in Gaza right now, are dying because of the lack of water that Mekorot company steals from them. That's why Mekorot always like to say that Israel was a desert, and now it's a kind of a garden, you know? Some, maybe like the European people like to say.
Right, sounds like the gardener of Europe.
Joseph Borrell.
Yes, Joseph Borrell, that's right.
More or less the same.
Yes.
So we have to say that it's not from this government, but the previous Peronist government. The interior minister was a person, his name is Guadalupe Pedro, a person related with human rights. He went to Israel and signed a contract for Mekorot to come to Argentina and control of the water plants of many provinces. They are already in 10 Argentinian provinces since the last year. So somehow Israel is controlling the water of half of the Argentinian population even right now. And that is something that not many Argentinian people really know about. And at the same time, all the companies that are coming here to get minerals, let's say gold, whatever mine that they're working for, they need a lot of water. And they have guaranteed all the water they need because this Zionist company, Mekorot, is going to sell them the Argentinian water for these companies that somehow are related to each other.
All right. Well, it seems like the Zionist interests, Israeli interests, are buying up land as well. So it does seem that this question of Palestine or Argentina is something that is still pressing for, or should be at least, on Argentinians' minds in terms of the way the Zionist project is treating the indigenous people of Palestine. It could be something that could become a threat to other places, because Israel is under a lot of pressure right now, and an apartheid state, no matter how much the U.S. supports it, is hopefully not a project that will continue for the long term.
It's obvious that Israel, since the last Iranian attack using the ballistic missiles, it shows that the people in that country are not safe. So it seems to me that they are searching for another place in case that they have to leave the occupied Palestine. And Argentina, it seems to be the right place for them because they already have their own president in this country. And one of the things that we've been searching for is that there's already companies selling land in Patagonia, which is the south of Argentina, only for Jewish people, only for Jewish people. If you are not a Jewish person, you cannot buy land in that community, at least in the Argentinian Patagonia. That is happening right now. And we found it and we say it. And of course, they don't recognize it. But at the same time, it's obvious that it's a reality because all the people that live in Patagonia, even the indigenous Mapuche, that are the native people in this part of the country, they know that it's something very common to see Israeli soldiers walking around Patagonia without any touristic purposes, let's say that way. So this part of our country is something that they always have in interest. And if the things are not going well in the Middle East, I'm sure they are searching for another place to stay. And as you say, in the 19th century, Theodor Herz wrote it very clear in that book, which is called the Jewish State, that for them, there are two places that in which they could build their own country. And one of them is still Argentina. So we are not sure that the option is over for them, or there's only another strategy. So maybe they use the military strategy for Palestine and the political strategy for Argentina.
There's a debate going on in, let's call them, leftist circles in the United States. There are those who argue that, you know, that Israel is controlling somehow the United States, whereas there's others who will say that, well, Israel being a colonial project, an unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East, in West Asia, for the U.S. imperial project, can't really be the tail wagging the dog. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, Sebastian, where does Zionism fit in all of this? To me, they're inseparable, but if we think of U.S. imperialism, NATO, and Zionism as being on the same team, who is the captain?
It's hard to know. In here, we say, we don't know what was first, if it was the chicken or the egg. But somehow we understand that Israel, it's, or it was, a Western project, you know, a project for the Western interest to stay in the Middle East. But once this kind of a Western Frankenstein started to move on his own, he became very dangerous, even for the people that created him, in this case, the Zionism movement. So we have, you know, in history, so many moments that make us understand that Israel, it's already, and since many years ago, out of control of London and Washington. We have even examples before the creation of Israel in 1948, like, for example, in the port of Haifa in 1940, there was a ship coming with a poor Jewish family that they wanted to, you know, run away from Germany, from Hitler, from Nazis, and they came to a port of Haifa. In that moment, was in control by the British government. And they decided that they wanted to send those Jewish families to the island of Mauritius, you know, near to Madagascar in Africa. But already the terrorist, Zionist groups were already working in the occupied Palestine. We are talking about the Haganah, we are talking about the Irgun, and they decided to blow up the ship. The name of the ship was called Patria. It's very interesting for the people that don't know about this. And they prove that the Zionist people even kill Jewish people if they think they're not part of their own project. That was of the reason that why the British wanted to send those families to Madagascar. So since that moment, and when they blow up even the Hotel King David in Jerusalem, where the British commanders were over there, they proved themselves that they are not going to receive orders so easily anymore from England or from the United States. So right now we are seeing that, for example, in the defense system of the United States, are full of people that are related to the Israel interest. So they are going to make all the decisions to always finance the defense of Israel. So you have the American people paying taxes to the American government to finance the war of Israel against the Palestinian civilian people. And that is something that is not clear for everyone. But they make it because they have, you know, the nest of Zionism inside of their own government. And that is happening in the United Kingdom and at the same time in the United States.
Yes, and that reminds me of the USS Liberty incident. This is in 1967, during the Six-Day War. A U.S. Navy technical research ship, USS Liberty, was attacked by Israeli Air Force jet fighter aircraft and torpedo boats. And I believe this incident was completely swept under the rug. I think that only perhaps survivors of that incident still try to bring it up, but it's absolutely hush-hush. You won't hear about it in mainstream media. You know, and talking about media control, you are producing a weekly show on an Argentinian TV channel. Tell us about that, the media control, the intimidation about information that is contrary to Zionist interests in Argentina. How do you carry that out? And what kind of lawfare, perhaps, you know, repression are people facing in Argentina for speaking up like you do?
We know that we are risking our own life. You know, this is the first time that I am in Argentinian TV, to be honest, because there's a company that decided than not to be part of Zionism media corporations in Argentina. I think it's the first time that is happening. So there's me and some other journalists that we have somehow, you know, the same point of view in many things, that we are part of this project. But we know that it's a very dangerous situation, because for much, much less, they sent people to jail here in Argentina. For example, there's a case of a very humble worker. His name was Christian Diaz. Was a worker from quite a poor area of Buenos Aires, Florencio Varela. And he posted in his social media, he didn't even belong to any group related to the Palestinian resistance, political resistance in Argentina. And he put something on Facebook against Israel. They accused him of being a terrorist. They went to his house in the middle of the night and, you know, got him as he was, you know, like a terrorist or something like that. Put him in a prison of maximum security. He's been there for almost a year. And because they didn't have any proof against him, they have to release him. But at the same time, the trial was still going on, and was a very mysterious thing, because in the last weeks, he appeared to be dead, and the police say that he killed himself, which is very, very strange. So I think it's a message like the mafia gives, you know, for every people that stand with Palestine, this is what can happen to you in a country like Argentina. And to be honest, there's a lot of people that don't go to the protest that supports the Palestinian cause because they are afraid, because they see what can happen to a person. And I think the Argentinian police and the forces related to the security here, somehow they are controlled by Israel.
And are there anti-Semitism laws on the books?
Yes, there's a law, even from the last government, not this one, because we have to be honest on this, that is related with the memory of the Holocaust. And Argentina signed it with his Minister of Foreign Affairs. In that moment was Felipe Solá. Little more or less, it says that if you criticize the state of Israel, the Zionism, in the same way that I'm doing it right now, they can accuse you and charge you of being or having an anti-Semitic practice somehow. And it's a kind of a protocol that they use to threat journalists, political activists, or anyone that wants to say something against Israel, that they can accuse you of that. So that is something that is still going on in Argentina. But what is interesting from the last year, especially since 7th of October of 2023, is that there is a lot of people that only now realize the nature of the Zionism, because they see videos in the internet with things that they could not believe that it could be happening in this very moment that we walk this this planet at the same time. So there's a lot of people in Argentina that is waking to this reality, and this is something that the Zionism in here understands very well.
In the U.S., I see a lot of Jewish people and Jewish groups speaking up against Zionism. You know, there are groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, not in our name, and they are on the front lines. Now, Argentina has a big Jewish community. Are the Jewish brothers and sisters speaking up against Zionism and saying, you know, when we said never again, we meant never again for anybody?
Yes, there's a group. It's called Judíos por Palestina. It means Jews for Palestine. They support Palestine every time that people march on the streets in Buenos Aires, supporting the Palestinian cause. And they say exactly that. Okay, we are Jew, but not in our name. You will oppress the Palestinian people. You will not kill them. So I will not say that it's a very, very big group, at least until now, but they speak loud and they are young boys and girls, very brave, and we admire that.
That was Argentinian journalist Sebastian Salgado. You can follow his work at Data Urgente on YouTube.
One whole year of genocide.
Real beheaded babies with no front pages. Israelis raping Palestinians in cages. US paid the wages. UK supplied intelligence. Elephant in room evidence. Levels of malevolence. Catastrophe developments. Starvation skeletons. Pestilence is prevalence. Trauma inheritance. Rampaging regiments. Degenerates wreck tenements. Weapon test experiments. Leave population to elements. Concentration colae in a camp where death awaits, a bomb descends and detonates, disembowels and vacerates, torsos torn shreds, bodies no heads, girls with no legs on their deathbeds, heads without skulls, hollowed out holes, where there were souls, dreams, goals, a father's last cuddle, in a blood-soaked puddle, a ghostly grey child hangs plucked from the rubble, planes bombing, shrapnel, embedded children, babies burnt to headlines without who killed them. Sick systems blame the victims for their decisions. Ignore the symptoms of cruel, callous coalition. Psychopathic politicians at the Hague, the mission. Incarcerate in prison, never pardoned or forgiven. 24/7, 365. one whole year of genocide. The world's most documented genocide in history. The most moral army in the world's military. Kills children, causes misery. Bombs buildings, deforms physically. Media lied deliberately. Propaganda trickery, death upon delivery. Her weapons supplied artillery from right to left to liberally, unequivocally. Cold cowards criminally, world stand by, do minimally. This is not a mystery, take it back to history. Evil banality, left horror to prevail. Nothing is illegal if no one could curtail. When good people do nothing, humankind fail. Just a passive tale, blind masses pray. On a massive scale, last breath exhale. Decomposing personnel, death is all around the smell. Welcome to the gates of hell. Mow the grass, then expel. Escape comprehended, the Nakba never ended. As the bombs dropped, ascended on the child undefended. A soldier smiles demented, self-defense presented. Victimhood invented, words pretend offended. Force of freedom makes you quiver. From the sea to the river, tidal wave, every killer, every sniper pulling trigger. Every child that you disfigure paints the world a bigger picture of a country getting sicker. Genocide, spread the virus. Racist rats, right to rape riots. Pious pirates, existential crisis. There's no coming back from this. Collapse the state catalyst. Your own antagonist. Psycho sadomasochist. As Palestine persists for the right to exist. The right to resist gets demonized, dismissed. 24/7, 365. One whole year of genocide.
That was One Year of Genocide by Bobby, B-B-O-B-B-Y-Y. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Paulina Vasilyev. On the one-year anniversary of the ongoing genocide in Gaza and pogroms in the West Bank, over 100 doctors, medical students, and University of California San Francisco workers joined together to remember injured and murdered healthcare workers, their families, and the people of Palestine. UCSF professor Jez Ganem spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
It's actually a very profound moment for all of us at UCSF because it's been 1 year of a catastrophic and depraved genocide that is happening to Palestine, now to Lebanon and to Yemen and throughout the region. And there's no end in sight. And we feel like it's important to commemorate, to note, to give voice, you know, to the 43,000 Palestinians, especially the women and the children who have perished, the people that are perishing in Lebanon and in Yemen and throughout the region, and the failure of this government and this institution, UCSF, to note it, to speak about it, and to do something about it. So we are assembling here, faculty, staff, and students, and we're going to acknowledge and pay our condolences to the tens of thousands that have died and are, you know, continuing to call out this administration and UCSF for their failure and their complicity in all of this.
And the idea that they're bombing hospitals, targeting healthcare workers, and the regents, the people who run this university, have nothing to say about that. I mean, it seems like...
Well, it seems like they do have a lot to say, and what they're saying is that we can't speak. And that's the problem. I mean, they're trying to shut down, you know, everything that we're doing in terms of being able to speak. And it's our moral, ethical obligation as healthcare workers to speak when we bear witness to atrocities. And, you know, it's our moral and ethical obligation. So the regents have basically told us we can't speak about this. Or if we do speak about it, we have to do it in a certain way that goes against academic freedom and free speech. We condemn that, obviously. So that's why we're here today. And we're also, you know, you could see that we have two tombstones for all the dead, representing the dead, the 43,000. You said that they're bombing hospitals and destroying healthcare infrastructure. I'm hoping that the viewers and listeners know that in Beirut, in Lebanon, Israel has killed 100 healthcare workers already with the recent bombings.
And all the rules, United Nations, Geneva Conventions, I mean, all the international rules that should protect healthcare workers, protect hospitals, it seems they're oblivious to it.
Well, that's one of the things that we're really concerned about, is that the destruction of the basic kind of agreement that healthcare workers should be protected, patients should be protected during times of conflict. All that rule, all that morality, all the ethics that we all agree upon when we engage in this work have been thrown out the window. Every patient is a target, every hospital is a target, and every doctor and nurse is a target.
And also, the university has started to target students. At UCLA, they attacked an encampment. The Zionists and right-wingers attacked an encampment, and they only arrested one person who was involved in that. And the students and staff members, UAW 284811, they've been targeted. I mean, is there an organized effort to basically go after people who do speak out?
Yeah, there is an organized effort. They are targeting faculty, staff, and students. And but we're pushing back. The faculty associations across all the campuses have filed an unfair labor practice complaint against the University of California and the president of the UC and the regents, basically saying, you know, what your attempt to shut down people's ability to speak their mind.
What happened to academic freedom?
What happened to academic freedom? Well, this is the classic Palestine exception, right? It's okay to have academic freedom as long as you don't talk about Palestine. So we filed that complaint. I'm not at liberty to say anything else right now, but we're pushing back, and we're going to push back in every way we can. And that includes legally as well as ethically and morally. It's our moral and ethical obligation to push back. Hey, listen, it's a year now. And it's not that the genocide hasn't stopped, because it hasn't, but it's amplified. Israel fired a U.S. bomb into a school again yesterday, killing over 20 civilians. They're bombing in the inner neighborhoods in Beirut, killing hospital workers and destroying healthcare facilities. They're sending missiles into Yemen. It's not that it's just the everyday genocide that we've been exposed to in this depraved manner. It's actually being escalated, and the United States is completely behind this escalation, despite what you hear from Blinken and Biden and Harris. They are full steam ahead. They're doubling down on Israel, and because of that, we're on the verge of this massive extension of this genocide and war throughout the region.
And Israel wanted the United States to invade Iraq. Iraq invasion.
Absolutely.
And now they want Israel to, Israel may invade Iran or attack Iran to a full-scale war.
I think it's on the table. I think attacking Iran is on the table. They're attacking Yemen right now. I mean, for those of us who've been around, you know, we know that after 9/11, it gave the United States and some of its allies the opportunity to destroy Iraq, Afghanistan. And this historical moment is now giving the Americans and the Israelis to further destroy an entire civic society and region in the greater Middle East and the Gulf. This is part of their overall plan, and Iran is definitely in the crosshairs right now. But, you know, Israel and the United States, they have miscalculated. We see that, you know, Iran and Lebanon and Yemen are able to defend themselves in ways that is surprising the Americans and the Israelis. And so I think this is a grave miscalculation, and we're all going to pay the price for it. We're all suffering. The world community is suffering as a result of this this depraved action and this genocide that's being carried out right now.
Well, I mean, the Zionists have said they have a right to do this to protect themselves. They have united with right-wingers around the world in their endeavors. And yet the political crisis in this country with the Democrats and Republicans, apparently they both support continued military aid and war.
Listen, there is no daylight between the Democrats and the Republicans and Israel on this genocide. And people need to know that. People need to know that Kamala Harris is just as complicit as Joe Biden, that there's no daylight politically, there's no daylight in terms of the intentionality. And so all the hand-wringing that you hear from the White House about how distraught Biden is complete rubbish. Biden is behind this. The Democrats and the Republicans are behind this. They are fomenting a kind of initiation into World War III-like conditions that are going to decimate millions upon millions upon millions of people and civic societies as we know it. And we saw what happened after Iraq and Afghanistan in terms of, quote, the unintended consequences. This is 10 times worse what the Americans and the Israelis are doing right now. And we're going to fight back. We're going to condemn it. We're going to do everything in our power to save the moral compass of humanity in this country, because people, if they really knew what the United States was behind,
it's a business. They make money on this world.
Yeah, and the other thing is that $20 billion has gone to Israel, and that's from the United States since last October 7th. And so people who are struggling financially, people who can't get adequate health care, people who can't get adequate child care, people who are being thrown out, who are unhoused, you know, where's your money going? I mean, we know it's going into this war effort, this industrial complex that's committed to war and destruction.
Yeah, we have this crisis with the hurricanes. We have East Palestine where they don't even have health care in East Palestine.
I mean, North Carolina and what's happening right now with the next Category 4 hurricane is going to decimate the eastern seaboard. People are 10 days now without electricity in North Carolina, without food, without electricity, without running water, and we're sending billions of dollars to Israel. So you do the math. That's what I say to people who say, well, why does this have anything to do with me? And I say, well, look at what's happening in North Carolina. Look at what's happening in the world, where in the United States, where people are financially not able to make ends meet and not able to get health care. It's because billions upon billions of dollars are being sent to this war machine, and Israel is doing the American bidding in this region. We need to understand that.
And they're saying they're running out of money at FEMA?
Yeah, they're running out of money for FEMA, but Biden and Harris are willing to send billions of dollars to the Israelis to kill more civilians. So that's why we have to open up our awareness of the interconnectedness of all these things, because when you explain things to people who may not have the familiarity about what's happening in Palestine right now, and you kind of break it down this way, everybody's disgusted about what's happening here. And I say this to mostly Kamala Harris lovers, you know, if Donald Trump is our next president, it's on you. It's not on people who called out the genocide. It's on you for doing this.
That was UCSF Professor Jez Ghanem speaking to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, cause Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, cause Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check, the junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up, and as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the Moon.
That was Gil Scott-Heron, Whitey on the Moon. Next, Block Report Radio's J.R. Val Ray talks to the legendary Amdi, one of the political forefathers of rap. Father Amdi is the leader and last standing member of the Watts Prophets.
Mr. Amdi, how are you?
I'm excellent, man, and I would like to open with a poem. I'm a poet.
Yes, sir.
The internet is a wonderful thing. But everything has a yin and a yang. And I hear people say each and every day that the internet will set modern man free, like a dolphin in the sea. Now, that statement completely confused me. Since when, my friend, has a net set anything free? Now, my simpleness I regret, but where's the freedom in a net? Fishermen make nets. Spiders weave webs. Both are traps. The spider knows all in its web. He keeps it inside day and night, wrapped real, real tight, with a click and a bite. Is it online or inline? Download, unload. Where's the freedom in the net? Stealth traps in your lap, snitch, zero, euro, sky, tail, intel, DSL, email, tail. Processing your personal social info, no telling where it go. Only the net maker really know. Now, you used to be able to shred it, but now that's jive. The hard drive is always alive. Wrap real, real tight with a click and a bite. Spider-Man can pull you up tonight. Free men free to enter a net will one day experience regret because there's no freedom in a net. Fishermen control their nets. Spiders control their webs. Who, my friend, controls the World Wide Web you're in? What spider has you in its website? Grab real, real tight with a click and a bite. Thank you.
AMD, the wise prophets. Well, how are you, sir? And thank you for that poem.
Yeah, I'm doing fine, man, and happy to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the internet. What inspired that poem in particular?
About well, many different things. One thing was they tell you what they're doing to you. It said internet, but I spell internet E-N-T-R-N-E-T, not I-N-T-E, however they spell it. I'm a rapper. I do what I want to do with words. I change them. They evolve. I change the meaning of them. That's what the ever-evolving language of rap is all about.
Well, can you talk to us a little bit about this censorship that Hillary Clinton, Blinken has been talking a lot about? They're basically equating a lot of activists and Pan-Africanist organs as agents of the Russians. When we speaking for ourselves, they feel like we are inspired by the Russians. How was the Watts Prophets perceived with such political messages that you guys have? How were you perceived, particularly in the 60s when you came down? And what are your dealings with censorship?
Well, that was the beginning of social engineering. And this is nothing new. It's just quite developed to where it is now. When people like the Watts Prophets came out after the Watts riots, people like Soledad Brothers, who were a group like the Watts Prophets, which you guys probably never heard of. Well, when we were going around, some cats were talking about Kill Whitey. We were talking about our problems, and we were grassroots, and we were a little different than the voice of Martin Luther King and them. We didn't want to sit on toilets next to white folks. We wanted our own toilets. We were that group. So we were evolving. And COINTELPRO came and burned down the Watts Writers Workshop in Watts because they had to kill that conversation. They had to kill that type of militant poetry. And the word militant was a word used against us. Blacks would use it because most of the damage done to us was done by educated black people. They were maybe working for white people, but the right facing us every day was done by them. And we watched them, COINTELPRO. They got into, you know, our children's, you know, as they began to investigate and follow and do things to groups like the Watts Prophets. It's developed on down to today. This is nothing new. It's the same COINTELPRO group. They didn't close down. They continue to do what they do. And that's keep the conversation that they want out there. But it's the artists. And it's art. They couldn't stop the Watts Prophets because our words continue to live wherever we put them out there.
Right.
And we didn't have no big campaigns. We never won any awards. But our poetry is all over the world. Sometimes the Watts Prophets get a million hits, half a million hits on some of the things we do. So we're still here. I've been sampled. The Watts Prophets or myself since sampling started almost every year. Our work continues to grow, but that element that you're talking about, the Clintons and the censoring of work, it's always been there. As I said, one word was used against us. Oh, they're militant, remember? And that, you know, destroyed so careers.
How does the word militant and the outcasting, because I think that that plays a little bit into what's going on with this Puffy situation. It's talking about how certain groups are allowed to ostracize people if they don't engage in certain activities. So, you know, whether it's a political thing or a sexual thing, can you talk a little bit about how that works in the entertainment industry?
Well, you know, it's almost like the gay community against the heterosexual community. That's who got cut out of this. The heterosexual black rappers who didn't want to do things like whatever is going on in there. The wise prophets got a peep at that, but they never let us see it clearly. They knew better, because we would have told on them early. We would have said it in our poetry. We would have known, you know, that this ain't cool. But that's been going on a long time in the music industry. And it didn't just start. Many people in Motown were gay. And they became gatekeepers sometime against heterosexual men. They cut us right out. So that's what I think about the Puffy thing. It's just another, because most of the people that got cut out were black. So it's just another example of black on black hate of each other. It's a serious problem. There's no love for each other.
We talked a little bit off air, and you were telling me about what you feel the obstacles in the black struggle of resistance have been, and you named the black colleges, and I had never heard this analysis. Can you please break it down, your analysis on the black colleges?
Where I got a chance to look at black colleges, sororities, and fraternities was right after the Watts riot. Millions of dollars was coming to Watts, and the educated African-American rushed the community, those sororities and those fraternities. They were like gangbangers. We didn't know they were there. And some of us didn't really realize it till we looked up and they had 25% of the middle management jobs. And they were looking out for each other because they had already pledged to themselves when they pledged to their sororities and fraternities. They had no pledge to the black community. They wanted in. We were the grassroots. We wanted our own. We wanted to survive. We didn't mind being in our own communities. And so they came like a gangbangers, man. They knew how to write the proposal, and we looked forward to them. We wanted them there. We looked up, and Angela Davis was living in the community. That's how they rushed us from the universities. Just her and others from everywhere, them black sororities and fraternities. And they came after the money because millions of dollars was coming to war. It was the war on poverty money. And they knew more about it than we did. They knew the politics of it and all. But we hoped as grassroots people, that's who I'm speaking for. And if you want to know where they, the grassroots people are, because we lost. We're the homeless blacks that you see straight across America, sleeping on the ground, sleeping in doo-doo tents. And that's what happened to those who lost. And the black sororities and fraternities and black educated, they led us in the wrong direction, including Dr. King. And he said it to, what was it, Sidney Poitier or one of them, Harry Belafonte. I'm afraid I led them into a burning house. We already knew it was burning. Malcolm was trying to tell us that it was burning. And we understood that, the grassroots people, because we was in that fire. But nobody was really speaking for us. As I said, they were speaking for mostly the Christian community, and they didn't speak to what was happening to the street people. So this is nothing new. It's social engineering at its finest. I watched it develop in Watts. I watched certain individuals, certain doctors who came and took credit for things like the Martin Luther King Hospital. My grandma and them had been fighting for a hospital since I was a little boy because we had to go miles to an emergency all the way to another community. My daughter was born on the street because we didn't make it to the hospital. It was too far. So this is nothing new. And when my son, I'm just telling you some of the things that they did. These were all black people doing black people, basically. They really, you know, betrayed our community, spent all the money and split. Cats like me who they had to deal with because I knew everybody in the community. We were like buffers. We didn't know that these people were teamed up against us like gangbangers.
As the world descends into World War III, I know that the Watts Prophets were active in the community during the Vietnam War and stuff like that. What do you have to say to these younger people, these younger artists that are out here and want to lend their voice to the fight that is against imperialism, that is against U.S. tax money going to overseas causes?
Well, first of all, African-American youth have a lot of problems because nobody cares about them. My grandson and I were just talking. I have a thing on the web about the technique that's used, was used and probably still is, where they call home and turn your family against you. They used to call my mother's job and tell them about me in school. And they would just continuously call till when you got home, your mother slapped you and your daddy wanted to beat you with a belt because, you know, they turned your whole family against you. And I used to wonder, you know, why gangbangers would tell me this is my family. Because the school had turned mother and father and everybody else that thought that, you know, I might have been, and the teacher might have just didn't like that kid. But the kid never had a say. They always believed the school. So they turned your family against you and disrupted your family with those phone calls. They used to call my mother on the job. So this is not new, man. This is not new, and it's on black people now. I don't know how long we're going to play this let's vote game. I've been watching, and we've been trying to get the vote. I'm 85, man. And we've been on this vote thing every year since I was a little boy. And we still ain't got it cool. The black educated is constantly leading us in the wrong direction. Out of all the, you know, the educated African-Americans, they say sisters are the most educated in this country. Well, we don't own anything of any major power. We haven't developed anything. In 1910, African-Americans had 20 million acres of farmland. And it was gotten by people who couldn't read and write because they wasn't long out of slavery. But they were smart enough to gather 20 million acres of land. I can remember that group because that was my grandma and it was mama and daddy and them. They were so happy. I remember my grandmother was happy that they was turning over their land and stuff and the business to the educated ones. Well, out of that 20 million acres of land, we have less than 1% worth left. They got a lot of degrees, but what are we getting out of those degrees? They got a degree. The community got a, and they didn't get a degree. They got a loss.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for coming on the Block Report, sir, and sharing a few of your words. We really appreciate it.
Leave me with a poem.
Okay, yes, sir.
Now is new. Now is new. Now is new. Right this moment, you can do something old or you can do something new. But now is new. Now is new. Yesterday went away. What are you going to do today? What are you going to do with now? Because now is new. Now is new. What are you going to do with now? Because a stagnated mind, I say a stagnated mind, I say a stagnated mind, it don't stagnate time. Time just moves on to now is new. Now is new. Come on this generation and do something new because now is new. Now is new. Now is new. And it's on you.
Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
All right.
You were just listening to the voice and the poetry of Amdi of the Watts Prophets right here on the Block Report with the People's Minister of Information, J.R. Valray. And if people would like to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
My website, wattsprophets.org. And then our albums are on all of the platforms.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you guys for listening.
All right. Peace.
Love.
That was Amdi of the Watts Prophets speaking to J.R. Valray. You can find more from J.R. on Instagram at Block Report Official. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from Steve Zeltzer, J.R. Valray, and myself, Polina Vasilyev. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Paulina Vasilyev. Thanks for listening.